Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Zelensky regime has made it clear it is not interested in any negotiations with Russia to end the military conflict. This should not surprise anyone. After all, this has been the position of the Biden administration all along. The collective West is intent on supporting this conflict until the last Ukrainian, maybe until there is no Ukraine left. Crosstalking diplomatic stalemate, I'm joined by my guest Larry Johnson in Tampa. He is a managing partner at Berg Associates and a former CIA analyst and U.S. State Department counterterrorism official. In Ohio, we have Oliver Boyd Barrett. He is a professor emeritus of journalism and public relations at Bowling Green State University, as well as author of Russiagate and Propaganda. And in Corpus Christi, we have Michael Flanagan. He is president of Flanagan Consulting and a former congressman. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let me go to Larry first in Tampa, who survived. Ian, I'm glad you have have you on this week. You couldn't last week for obvious reasons. Larry, what do you make of Zelensky signed a decree? There's no negotiations, at least not with this current Russian president. And of course, as I said in my introduction, this is an echo of what the Biden administration has supported all along. So I will invoke that moron named Borrell, the foreign policy chief for the EU. This will be cited on the battlefield. I guess that's pretty clear, huh? Go ahead, Larry.
The final propaganda push is underway. Zelensky certainly is doubling down on a very bad hand, despite all of the hoopla, the propaganda going on in the West about the great victories of Ukraine and how Russia's in retreat, Putin's on the verge of collapse. It's going to happen any minute now. All we got to do is hold on. And yet, the reality is something else. And The bottom line fact is Ukraine does not have the ability to sustain itself on the battlefield without continued supplies coming from the United States and NATO. And the ability of the United States and NATO to continue those supplies is receding. It's not increasing. The kinds of actual weapons that the United States can send and that the Europeans can send is not the top of the line material, tanks, planes. It's the secondhand stuff. And on top of that, the ammunition supplies that the West has to provide are being depleted, and they do not have the industrial base they once had. This is not the World War II United States that could really crank up and produce stuff. So Zelensky's in trouble. It's just the world hasn't caught up to it yet.
You know, Michael, with the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines, again, that's kind of taking a piece off the chessboard, because that was something very important for the Russians and for particularly the Germans, but Europe in general here. I think we all know who did it, but I don't want to waste time talking about that. But the fact of the matter is that was a form of an interaction that was very important for both parties. That's been taken off the board. Because there's been talk, there was talk for weeks that the Germans were interested in coming to some kind of understanding with the Russians. Somebody else decided, nope, there's going to be no understanding. Your thoughts?
I think you've summed it up absolutely correctly. There's going to be no solution if left to Gloria Nuland and the other geniuses at Foggy Bottom and at the NSA. They're the thought leaders of this nightmare, and it won't end. Let me say from the outset, Putin should not have invaded. He should have not left his own borders. But dealing with that reality, we need to come to peace. And to come to peace, you have to have the parties come to the table. So if you're going to have some ridiculous, the only thing we'll accept is unconditional surrender like they did in the Second World War, well, you better be in a position to win the war. Well, you know what? Zelensky's not, and it's just not going to happen. It's laughable to imagine that Ukraine could win this war. And the fact that we continue to live in the West in a media circus that drives this narrative, it confuses me deeply, because there is no way to grind this down. Mr. Putin will win this war, and the longer it takes, the more brutal it will be.
Yeah, but Michael, you can escalate up. I agree with you. There were ways. maybe a ray of hope that could happen now. I tend to doubt it, but you can escalate. So let me go to Oliver in Oahu. Is that this is what I worry about, because I've learned a lot from Larry Johnson, our guest in our program. I did a podcast on the gaggle with George Samueli, which, you know, had much longer length. But, you know, what worries me is that the West doesn't have the conventional capacity to maintain this war. And so there's the next step, and that's the big step, okay? And we hear all of this talk about, you know, using the tactical nuclear weapons. That's not the Russians saying it. This is an insinuation from the West, because they don't have the conventional capacity to stay in a conflict against Russia. Oliver, go ahead.
Yeah, this issue of conventional capacity is kind of important, because although they do seem to have run out of their own stocks for their own defense purposes, let alone for the defense of Ukraine, they are pouring billions of dollars more into orders for future deliveries of hardware. And those orders will eventually be met to the great profitability of the Western arms manufacturers, who seem to be the primary beneficiaries of this war, by the way. And but my thinking is that at some point those new orders for weaponry do have to start rolling in. I'm not sure how many months it takes, and I dare say it takes different periods of time according to what categories of weaponry we are talking about. I'm thinking the winter. This is a very, very dangerous time for the West. Because the situation in the battlefields, despite the misleading optics of Kharkiv and Kherson, this is not a good time for the West. And we're entering autumn, we're entering winter, when it's going to be very difficult for either side to launch major offensives.
Well, but Oliver, when it's the rainy season where I am right now, to say it's a rainy season in Ukraine. Russia has a very good history of fighting in the winter. Stalingrad, the defense of Berlin. Okay, winter's not a big problem. Hard ground is good. Okay, Larry, you know, one of the things that really bothers me about a lot of the commentary on the conflict is that we have to look at it in a very broadly. What Russia's doing now, It wants to avoid having to have to do it in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. They want a definitive outcome for their security needs. So much commentary about this overlooks that. Go ahead, Larry.
Now, well, I think part of the problem is the West looks at this entirely as a football game, that who scored a point, who's allowed a goal. And they forget the, you know, Clausewitz dictate that war is just an extension of politics, and you've got to look at the broader politics. And that's where I think the Russians clearly have the advantage here. And we saw it we can't recall if it was Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, but when OPEC Plus turns around and says, hey, we're going to reduce the production of oil at the very time that Washington and Europe are begging for lower oil prices and more oil. Now, if Saudi Arabia and the rest of the OPEC nations, Nigeria, thought that Russia was just getting clobbered and was on the verge of collapse, does any sane person think that those countries would align themselves with a guaranteed loser? Absolutely not. They're not crazy. So the people need to take into account the politics of this, which also gets into the economics. And so from that standpoint, what's happening militarily on the ground, I don't want to minimize it, but it's a bit of a sideshow. And yeah. It's the drama the West needs, or is a sitcom mentality.
That's such a good point, because, Michael, I think that, you know, when we look at, here we are, we're in October, winter is beginning to start. And I think we're going to have a very different conversation, echoing what Larry just said there, not about the battlefield, but the condition of Europe's economy and, by extension, the United States. Go ahead, Michael, in Corpus Christi.
Yeah, I think General Kutuzov said it, but General Winter is on its way. The Russians do very well in the winter. The West does not. And Zelensky isn't doing very well anywhere. Putin laid out several months ago 5 points for, you know, a point where we can stop fighting and discuss the permanent relinquishment of the Crimea, a promise not to go into NATO, and several other things. Those goalposts have moved as Russia has paid a price on the ground and has captured the Donbass, or virtually all of it, and now has other designs, I'm guessing, because Zelensky drags this out. So the Russian view is to ratchet up the pain and come to the table and let's have a done with this. And the pain will continue to be ratcheted up by the Russians because they can afford to do it. They have the capacity to do it. And so I think the battle is something a little more than a sideshow, although it is subordinate to the political discussion, to be sure. But I think it's the method by which Putin is trying to bring this to an end and move on to talks. And so we shuffled into Kharkov, and then we got pushed out. They'll go back in. I think they will. Odessa looms large in the winter, if there's a winter offensive, and I'm sure there will be. The problems for Ukraine are insurmountable the longer they drag this out in a political sense as well as a military one. They would do well to come to the table now. I don't think they can. I don't think Gloria Nuland, I don't think my dear friend I came into Congress with, Senator Graham, is going to let them do these things. I think they're as you said at the outset, they're going to fight to the last Ukrainian.
Well, I mean, Michael, that means
in Washington.
I'm agreeing with you, but that means they don't really care much about Ukraine, right?
It's kind of true. Both of them care far more about hurting Russia than they do about protecting Ukraine. That is a fact.
Well, and also the derivative of that is that what kind of economic damage will be lasting damage, because trade ties will change and people to say, well, I'm going to stick with the Russians, I'm going to stick with the Chinese, because the Europeans don't even know how to protect their own interests here. All right, gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on diplomatic stalemate. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing diplomatic stalemate. Okay, let's go back to Oliver. Oliver, going back to the sabotage of the pipelines, it says, you know, two things stand out in my mind. Number one, obviously, whoever did this wanted to cut that economic energy relationship, but it may, at the end of the day, cripple Germany, certainly not Russia. This is an annoyance for Russia. They might rebuild it, might repair it, but if someone's going to blow it up again, then why do it, okay? And number two, that kind of civilian infrastructure, I guess, is on the table. There are other pipelines in the Baltic. I just think who did this thinking in very short term, as if it might make some kind of dramatic difference. It doesn't. It may in the short, medium run, and that will be Germany and the European economy. Go ahead, Oliver.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that it's short term, Peter. It may actually be quite long term in a worrying way. Which is to say that were we to make the presumption that the United States has had a hand in the sabotage, of course, there's going to be an investigation into this. It'll be an investigation into which Russia will not be invited. Shades of MH17 shenanigans in 2014. But I think the long-term game here is for the United States both to crush Europe and to crush Russia simultaneously. That is the game plan. And at the same time, to make it impossible for Europe and Russia to collaborate. That will have the effect of consolidating Russia's pivot to Asia. It will have the effect of greatly solidifying and strengthening the Asian, Chinese-led Asian alliances. It will have the effect of, whether the United States wants it or not, of ushering in the multipolar world that so terrifies the Washington elites. The saddest part of, well, there are so many sad parts of the story, and the suffering of the Ukrainian, all Ukrainian people, is one of those. But another very, very sad element of this story is the crushing of Europe, and in particular, the crushing of Germany. Except the Germans don't seem to realize yet what is happening to them. I think I can only assume that they are so integrated into a power structure that is dominated by the United States that they don't see that they have career possibilities anywhere else other than to be pawns.
Yeah, but I just think they're just obsessed with this neoliberal ideology. They can't break out of it. I mean, they can't see reality for what it is because they're ideologically blind. Larry, let's talk about that, because I think we're all in agreement. The prize in all of this is continued American hegemony over Europe. Okay, you know, check that box. But the prize of Europe is a very modern, high productivity economy. I mean, without cheaper energy, you don't have, I mean, you go pre-industrial. I mean, I don't know what Europe is going to be. Maybe a destination for tourists from India and China to see what people used to live like, because the prize is worthless if it doesn't have high productivity. Right. Larry.
I posted an open thread on my blog the other day asking people, well, what's your economic situation? I have a remarkable readership. I mean, people from around the world. I got comments from a lot from Europe, Asia, Africa, Australia, Canada. We're in a global economic crisis. And what's coming out of Europe is particularly disturbing in terms of across the board. The people that were commenting were saying, look, my bills have doubled. They've tripled. People that have been expats are now selling their property and they're leaving Europe to try to come back to the United States because it's so bad. So the reality for the people, for the civilians, the populace, on a grand scale, this is a little bit like that moment in the French Revolution where Marie Antoinette was saying, let them eat cake, because the leadership is so out of touch with what's going on with the average citizen, the business people that are trying to keep bakeries open, or heavens, even with toilet paper producers in Germany having to declare bankruptcy, one of the necessities of life, if you will. So their failure to come to grasp, to come to grips with the economic consequences of this policy towards Russia underscores the fact that they're not thinking about this in terms of a comprehensive strategy to win a war, or they're focused only upon how can we hurt Russia.
Yeah, but that's not in anyone's security interest in the long run. Right. Again, that's why I keep saying we have to take steps back here, because what about the European security architecture? We need to talk about that, okay? I mean, they can be as much Russophobia as you want, but they're still your neighbor. You can't do anything about
that.
Let me go to Michael. Michael, you know, there's energy cap on Russian energy, which of course is kind of unicorn stuff in my mind. I still don't really understand it. I don't think anybody really does. But I mean, let's flip the script here. Will there be a cap on high priced LNG from the United States? Is anybody talking about capping that? Because this is obviously looking for to seize a market, this energy market. The Americans want it. They want to deny it. The Russians, okay? But in the middle is Europe. I mean, what they're going to be charged is going to be, again, their productivity will fail. Michael.
After the Second World War, when Europe was in ashes, the United States owned about half the world's GDP, believe it or not.
Yep.
125, 150 million people owned half the world's GDP. Today, we own a little less than a quarter, and it's going down. But the people making decisions for our economic future, our military future, our hegemony in Europe, which I believe is ebbing quickly, still live in a world where we call all the shots. We absolutely do not anymore, and we need to come to understand that. And I don't think Nuland or Biden or the 30-something nameless, faceless children who run the White House have a clue what they're doing. The future of this country, of the United States, is going to be increasingly interdependent on an economically vibrant globe, however much it's being harmed now. And you know, it has been said here that they are in pain, and that is a fact, but we will share that pain shortly. And it's coming, and it's going, and it's inexorable. Inflation is going to be the smallest problem we've got coming shortly. You know, it used to be the United States catches a cold and the world gets pneumonia. It's going to be the other way around, and our comeuppance is coming quickly here. We don't have the economic power we did even 30 years ago, and we continue to manage a foreign policy that pretends that we do.
Well, and also, there's one thing that the U.S. has, enormous amounts of debt. Oh, so do the Europeans. Enormous amount of debt here. Oliver, one of the interesting things of all of this is that the Global South has just turned its back on this whole affair. This is between the Europeans and the Russians. Don't drag us into it. You know why? Mostly because you don't have a solution to end it. Why should I back your cause if there's no ending to this, okay? And the Global South is staying on the sidelines. That's very significant in light of what Michael just said. Go ahead, Oliver.
Yes, absolutely. And we see some signs of that in Africa, where countries like Mali and Burkina Faso and some others in Central Africa are turning away from one of the U.S. key allies, France, in favor of the Russian Wagner Group. So that is a very interesting development. Can I just go back, Peter, to the issue of the LNG? Blinken said quite recently that the sabotage of the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines was a wonderful opportunity for the United States. Actually, he's wrong, because the United States is not producing enough LNG to service the European market. Facing steep gasoline prices, rises in gasoline prices here in the United States. So it needs as much gas for its own population as possible. And also the shale revolution of the past 10 to 20 years is now drawing to an end. There will be a diminution of shale oil and gas supplies in the United States. This is a dwindling resource. And the idea that if the United States believes that there is a future in selling LNG to the United States, to Europe, and Europe is not going to be bailed out either by the mythology of U.S. LNG, even at steepest possible prices, yeah, by contrast.
Clearly, none of these people have thought any of this out. You know, Larry, what are future historians going to say about this? I mean, this is all self-inflicted. These are craven choices. None of this should be happening. Larry.
Some eerie parallels, if you will, with the First World War, because when you look back at how the world got drug in, Europe in particular was drug into a completely unnecessary, massive slaughter. The historians will look back at this period and see a complete failure of leadership across the board, an unnecessary provocation of Russia, and a refusal to negotiate. And in the end, this is going to lead to, unfortunately, widespread pain, I think death, destruction. I don't mean to be a doomsayer, but the future is dark in what we're looking at, because the leaders are refusing to stand up and try to be reasonable adults.
You know, Michael, I think when all is said and done, what's going to be left of Ukraine, you can call it Benderstan, okay, because that's all that's going to be left. The longer this goes on, the smaller Ukraine gets. Last 25 seconds, go to you, my friend.
Thank you, sir. I think you're absolutely correct. Putin is trying to ratchet up the pain and saying, anytime you want to talk, we're ready to talk and stop this. And what does Zelensky say? To the death. We'll fight to the death. Are you insane? It will never stop until the Russians win. That's when it stops.
Well,
let it stop now.
And Michael, I'm sure Zelensky's got a plane on the tarmac with all the money in it, and it'll just pull the Afghan president variant and just flee the country, okay? Or he'll end up in a ditch. One way or another, it's going to end. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. Many thanks to my guests in Tampa, Oha, and Corpus Christi. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RTC. And next time, remember, Crosstalk rules.